Hi everyone, welcome to the weekly question and answer session for members of the Personal Paleo Launchpad. I'm Laura Schoenfeld, I'm a nutritionist with a master's degree in public health.
And I'm Kelsey Marksteiner, a registered dietitian with a master's in human nutrition and functional medicine.
Thanks for joining us for this week's question and answer session. As usual, we'll be answering your questions from the Q&A question submission form or from the section of the forum in that's titled Q&A. So if you have a question about your personal paleo code or about nutrition in general, let us know by submitting your question to the forum and we'll do our best to answer it on the next show. And remember, this is just general advice and should not be used in place of medical advice from a licensed professional. So you ready to get started with our first question, Kelsey?
Yep, and this one's for you, Laura.
Awesome.
I just listened to the most recent podcast about carbs and would be interested in hearing more about the difference in fructose versus glucose in the body and if that affects the carb recommendations, i.e. is there such thing as too much fruit?
Okay, so I'm going to cheat a little bit on this question and mostly just refer to an article that Chris wrote a while back on the topic of fructose. And this is a controversial issue that seems to never really go away, even though the evidence doesn't really support the beliefs of a lot of the more dogmatic paleo bloggers. I still see a lot of, writing about how fructose is a toxin and how carbs are, going to kill your brain and all this stuff. And I think Chris has done a really good job at really covering the evidence as far as how these foods actually affect your health and your risk for disease in the future. This isn't to say that there aren't some people who might benefit from carb restriction or fructose restriction, but I would say in general, most people are not going to have horrible health effects from eating whole food carbs. So ultimately, the short answer to this question is that when it comes to whole foods and the average general healthy person, the fructose versus glucose content of foods doesn't really matter a whole lot. And as Chris pointed out in the article that he wrote, the biggest issue with fructose occurs when calories in the diet are in significant excess. So when you're eating high fructose whole foods, like mostly coming from foods like fruit, people that are eating the high amounts of fruit will actually compensate by eating less overall in their diet and possibly even less calories than they would have without the fruit. And they thus don't experience the same health problems that someone drinking soda or getting fructose from processed foods would experience. So, people are worried that eating fruit is going to make them fat because of the fructose content. And most research out there, the evidence suggests that eating fruit actually reduces your overall calorie intake without, actually needing to count calories. And it will thus help people either maintain a healthy weight or lose weight if they have a lot of extra weight to lose that, is unhealthy additional weight. And so Chris also pointed out in this article that humans are not as good at creating fat out of dietary carbohydrates as mice are. And a lot of the evidence coming from those studies that the dogmatic paleo bloggers point out, a lot of that evidence showing fructose as being uniquely fattening has been done in mice and not humans. So there's really not a whole lot of human evidence that supports this theory that consuming fructose will stimulate fat production. And the other issue is that these mice studies generally are providing so much fructose to the mice that it would basically be impossible to consume that much, even in a standard American diet, drinking soda and that kind of thing. So these studies don't really prove anything about fructose in whole foods being dangerous at all for, just the average healthy person. So ultimately, I think you can get carbs from either fruit or vegetables, and it doesn't really matter too much for most people that are new to paleo or, have been on a paleo diet for a while and want to be getting maybe more carbs than they've been eating or just are getting tired of eating sweet potatoes at every meal. And really, the truth is you're not going to get fat from eating a banana instead of a potato or, eating an apple instead of a sweet potato or any of those more commonly safe starches that a lot of paleo bloggers kind of promote. And in the context of a calorically appropriate diet, which means you're eating the number of calories that your body needs to burn in a day and you're not overeating, a moderate carb intake from any paleo carb source or any of those safe starches that they like to, you know, say in air quotes, is perfectly fine. So I don't think people need to worry about, you know, whether they're getting their carbs from fructose or glucose. And the only population that I think needs to be careful about eating fruit are people that have fructose or FODMAP intolerance. And so these folks are going to have to be selective about the type of fruit that they eat, and they'll need to avoid high fructose containing fruits. Because if they're eating fruits that are high in fructose, this can exacerbate the digestive symptoms that they're dealing with, contribute to gut dysbiosis, and, you know, potentially contribute to either constipation or diarrhea in those with IBS and other susceptible individuals. And there are a lot of people who have chosen paleo as a diet because they have IBS or other significant digestive issues. And some people do have a lot of success on a low FODMAPs diet. And this, you know, the F in FODMAPs stands for fructose. So this is why a person who does better on a low FODMAPs diet will actually want to avoid fructose or fruits that contain a lot of fructose.
Laura, I just wanted to make one correction there. The F stands for fermentable, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But you're right. Fructose is absolutely a FODMAP. I just want to make sure that was clear for people.
Oh, whoops. I'm sorry. I think I just made an assumption because it's fermentable oligo di mono
and polyols. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So is fructose the di in there?
I forget. Well, fructose, I don't remember, but yeah, so it's fermentable.
I'm sorry. So I thought it was fructo oligo di. I thought it was the F was fructose. Okay. Well,
a fair assumption, I think, but yeah. So FODMAPs do include fructose. But yeah, the F is for fermentable.
Okay. Well, now that I'm embarrassed,
no worries.
Hopefully people will not shut off the podcast now because they've heard that mistake. But regardless, the fructose is a FODMAP. So if you're doing well on a FODMAP diet, you will want to avoid fructose for the beginning of that diet change. And the nice thing about being on a the less restrictive thing about being on a FODMAPs diet is oftentimes people can return to eating certain FODMAPs that don't bother them. So just because you do well on a FODMAPs diet doesn't mean fructose is necessarily something that will bother you. It may be that there's a specific other type of FODMAP. Like, I know garlic and onions tend to be heavy hitters for some people. Mm-hmm. So you may be able to return to eating fructose or be able to deal with just a small amount of fructose as far as eating fruits and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily that you can't have any fruit forever. It's, you know, you want to avoid the high fructose fruits, and then you may be able to return to eating them once you've kind of gotten some of that gut dysbiosis taken care of. But otherwise, I can't really think of anyone else specifically who should avoid fructose from whole food sources as opposed to just, you know, carbs in general. Obviously, those of you who are on a low-carb diet, you're going to be avoiding glucose sources just as much as you're avoiding fructose. And this question was specifically addressing fructose versus glucose. So I really feel like the only people who need to be concerned about the fructose content of certain plant foods are those who are specifically fructose intolerant or on a low FODMAPs diet. So that's how I feel about that answer. Kelsey, do you have anything to add about people that might need to avoid fructose specifically?
No, yeah, I think it's just really those people who are FODMAP or specifically fructose intolerant that would really need to worry about it. And I think this kind of brings up something that we go back to a lot, I think, which is that if you're eating real food, when it comes down to everything, you know, you're going to be just fine. I often see people who are really, really so, they get stuck on these questions, these pretty insignificant questions when you see, you know, when you're looking at the whole scheme of life, mm-hmm. these very small questions, and it really trips them up and it makes them really start to worry about their food. And I think that can be more harmful than they might think it is. So I definitely think that, you know, if you're doing the best you can and you're eating whole food, you shouldn't worry about the little stuff like this. As long as it's coming from real food, evidence shows that, you know, there's really nothing to worry about. You're not going to gain weight. And of course, unless you're eating too many calories for your body, which when you're eating a real food diet, that's much less likely to be the case. than, you know, if you're eating a very processed diet. So I think,
and I think it would be hard to eat too many, like, I mean, you can overeat certainly, but, eating the amount of excess carbohydrates from things like fruit and potatoes and that kind of stuff, it would probably be kind of hard just based on the amount of volume you're getting. You know, like an apple probably only has like 20 grams of carbs in it versus, you know, I think that's like 1.5 teaspoons of sugar or something has that many. So it's like, you know, trying to eat as much carbohydrates from whole foods is really difficult.
Yeah, it's a totally different ball game.
But yeah, just to clarify, I had to search the FODMAPs thing because now I'm like, I need to remember this for next time because I know, you know, what the actual FODMAPs are, but the acronym FODMAPs is fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, and polyols. And oligosaccharides are fructans and galactans. The disaccharides are lactose. Monosaccharides.
Right, it's like fructose.
Fructose, yeah. And then polyols are the sorbitol, mannitol, all those, you know, like fake sweetener kind of things. And they're also in some fruits too. So again, some of those fructose containing fruits, you know, if you have a fructose sensitivity, those will be off limits for you. But a lot of people, it's more a lactose thing, maybe a fructan thing. So those are the garlic and onions and other vegetables. So yeah, I mean, it'll depend what the actual foods are that they're sensitive to, but, you know, that doesn't mean fructose is bad for you any more than it means that fructans are bad for you.
Right. Or, you know. For most people, those things are totally benign. You know, they don't cause any problems. So it's only if you're FODMAP or fructose intolerant that, yeah, fructose might be an issue for you. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I'm looking at this website and I just realized I even missed the M because they put the disaccharides and monosaccharides together. And it's just funny because when you look at the FODMAP list, they always start by saying excess fructose. And fructans. And I was like, oh, fructose must be the F. So.
Right. You would think. Yeah,
anyway,
I know.
Now that I've, you know, successfully inserted the foot into the mouth, I would say that, yeah, I mean, most people, I think, really, it's going to be hard for you to get too much fructose if you're eating fruit and vegetables and... a lot of people do better on a moderate carb diet anyway, so I don't want people to be avoiding fruit because they think it's unhealthy or that it's too much sugar or something just because, you know, especially with weight loss, I just feel like it's not really helpful for a lot of people that either have tried low carb and not done well or, you know, people that don't have a lot of excess weight to lose. I think that, you know, fruit really isn't something that people often benefit from eliminating. So.
Right. I totally agree.
Cool. Well, I guess that is that. And I will, you know, share a link to Chris's article just in case people are interested about the fructose question. And, you know, just he goes over some of the evidence and lack thereof. So it's a good article to refer to if you need a little bit more science for this answer.
Yeah.
But all right, so let's move on. The second question is for you, Kelsey. This one asks, I had a sinus infection for over 3 weeks that I just couldn't kick, and that was crushing my already weakened adrenals. So I had to go on high-dose Augmentin on day 17 of my 30-day reset and won't finish the antibiotic course until day 26. I know this will wreak havoc on all the good things the 30-day reset has been doing to my gut. Should I extend my 30-day reset longer to let my gut heal before starting to reintroduce gray area foods?
All right. So that's a great question. I think, you know, sometimes life just throws us a curveball exactly when we're trying to stabilize all these variables in our life to try to get the most out of the reset diet. I think this is a very common thing that happens to people. So what's the best way to handle this? First, in the case of taking antibiotics, I think it's really important to prevent as much as possible, you know, that we can, any harm that can come from taking antibiotics. And a lot of people experience something called antibiotic-associated diarrhea when on an antibiotic, so it's really important to try to prevent this. And we can do that by taking probiotics. It's kind of the easiest way to do that. And my top recommendations for probiotics to take while you're on antibiotics are Florastor, which is a specific strain of Saccharomyces boulardii. It's called Saccharomyces boulardii Biocodex. Another one is VSL number 3, which contains a few different strains that have been shown to help prevent antibiotic-associated diarrhea. And Culturelle, which contains the Lactobacillus rhamnosus GG strain. So all of those strains have actually been shown to decrease the incidence of antibiotic-associated diarrhea. So it's an excellent idea to be taking at least one of them. Taking antibiotics can also cause an overgrowth of yeast. So in this case, it might be that Florastor has a slight advantage over the other strains of bacteria because it's actually been shown to decrease that yeast overgrowth if taken with antibiotics. But that said, the other two just haven't been studied in that capacity, so it's quite possible that they would also have that yeast lowering effect. And you don't need to take all of those probiotics. Taking just one is perfectly fine. Usually they can kind of give you the same results, so that's just fine to take one of them. Remember that with probiotics, more is not always better, as with a lot of things in life. Probiotics, you just kind of need to take the required amount, and they'll give you the results you're looking for. So definitely taking a probiotic while you're on your antibiotic, and I would suggest taking it after you're done as well. That's a really great idea just to prevent that potential diarrhea that can happen and the change in bowel movements, which could really kind of throw you off in terms of your symptoms that you're probably looking to get rid of on the reset diet. And just one little warning there too is that taking probiotics while you're taking antibiotics doesn't cancel out the probiotic effects. A lot of people seem to think that which kind of makes sense, if you think about it, if you're taking something that's supposed to kill bacteria and then you're also taking good bacteria, you would think that it just kills the bacteria and you're just wasting your money. But research clearly shows that there's a benefit to taking probiotics along with antibiotics. So don't worry about that. You're way better off to take them. So
what about just quick question?
Go ahead, Laura.
This is something my doctor would recommend when I was on antibiotics. What about taking the probiotic separately from the antibiotic? Like, say you take two antibiotics a day, would you say making sure you space those doses out as far as, getting the probiotic separate?
Yeah, I think if you can, it certainly makes sense to do that. Right, if you're taking like an antibiotic that you only have to take every 12 hours, trying to get it, the probiotic in between those doses would be a good idea. I haven't seen a lot of research on that as to whether it actually makes a difference or not. But just, thinking logically, you would think that more of those probiotics would survive if you took it as far away as possible from the antibiotic. But I guess we'll have to see if they ever do research on that.
Yeah, I just, I haven't seen research specifically, but like I said, it was a recommendation by my doctor that I just did because I was like, okay, sure, I'll do that.
Right, so, it makes sense, yeah.
I guess it's one of those, like, until you know for sure, you might as well make the most, logical choice.
Exactly. I totally agree. So, that's what I recommend to people now. We don't have a ton of research on it yet, but I think if you're just, thinking with common sense that does make sense to just take it as far away as you can. Hopefully, I don't know how often this person has to take their antibiotics, but it can get a little tricky if you have to start taking them, every couple hours or something. But yeah, doing the best you can to take them as far away as possible, really great idea. So now that we've kind of determined how to minimize any side effects of the antibiotics, I do think it's important to talk about how this changes the 30-day reset period that this person is going through. Since antibiotics have a really dramatic effect on the gut bacteria, which of course in turn plays a big part in our overall health, I think it's a smart idea to extend your 30-day reset period if you can do that. And it sounds like this person is on a 10-day course of Augmentin, which, when we're talking about a 30-day reset period, that's a pretty substantial amount of time. In terms of how long we want to extend the reset diet, I think it really, really depends. Some people might find that the antibiotics do a number on them, and even with probiotics, they'll experience some definitely unwanted symptoms, and others might find that they experience no side effects at all. So because of this, I definitely recommend to really pay attention during the course and see what happens. You know, how do your symptoms change? Keep notes about all of those symptoms throughout the whole reset, but especially so if a big change happens to come, you know, right in the middle of it. Then you can look at your diary and say, all right, being on the antibiotics really messed with my bowel movements. And that makes sense, you know, just thinking about it. I didn't just randomly experience a significant loss of all the progress I've made so far. It actually is probably tied back to these antibiotics. Then, you know, if you do find that your symptoms get a lot worse, I'd give yourself at least an extra 10 days on the reset diet just to make up for that lost time. And you might find, which is fine too, that you basically need to start over on the reset diet and kind of give yourself a whole 30 days. That's also fine too. I really just want to encourage you to pay attention to how you feel and make a judgment call based on that, because it's entirely possible that you might feel your symptoms didn't change at all as a result of the antibiotics. That's perfectly fine. But for most people, I do think they'll see some amount of change that happens as a result of taking antibiotics, even if it's just a small difference in their bowel movements. And in that case, I think it's best to wait to move on to step two until your bowel movements or, you know, whatever change you notice as a result of the antibiotics, until those things go back to how they were before, at least, you know, if not improved from even at that point too. So since this person will be on day 26 when they end their course, it's likely that their symptoms won't go back to normal by the time day 30 hits, which in this case, you know, I would really recommend giving the reset at least until their symptoms go back to normal, which could definitely be up to 10 days from there. But from there, you know, I think this person would be good to go to move on to step two, as long as they're back to how they really felt before the antibiotics, if they felt they had already made a lot of progress. If they didn't feel that they made a lot of progress, you know, they might need more time or even feel that redoing the whole 30-day reset might make the most sense. So it's very person-specific, and I really just want to stress that here. And while this question was specific to taking antibiotics, I think the advice stands for any major changes you experience, you know, while you're on this 30-day reset. If you have a crazily stressful week at work, that's a really big variable change. You know, if your dog dies, that's a huge variable change. If you undergo even just a minor surgery, that's also a big change. So it's important to keep track of those things and give yourself a little extra time on the reset just to get back to normal at least before moving on to step two. So pay attention to your body and make sure you're noticing the effect of these changes and make adjustments to your reset based on them. You might find that just giving yourself a couple extra days on the reset is where you need to go, or starting over is also, you know, the worst case scenario, but it probably is well worth it before introducing some of those gray area foods if you're worried about it. So I hope that helps. So Laura, did you have any other advice on this question?
Yeah, I mean, I think was a really good answer. And like you said, it really just depends on the person, because some people have horrible gut reactions to antibiotics and right. Other people don't. I mean, like I was saying in the last question, I was on antibiotics for 8 months, like six different types of antibiotics, because wow. I was being treated for Lyme disease. So I mean, granted, I was already on a pretty healthy diet, so, and I was taking probiotics as well, and I honestly hardly had any noticeable symptoms, like gut changes from that. So for me, I didn't necessarily need to do anything, you know, not crazy, but, you know, like really strict about changing my diet to, mm-hmm. to manage those side effects. But like I said, some people, they go on a short course of antibiotics and they have terrible gut pain or diarrhea or any of those typical side effects that a lot of people get. So I think really making sure you're paying attention to your own symptoms is really important. And I feel like the other thing is it's called a 30-day reset because we like to say that that's the minimum that you need to be on it.
Right.
But with, like you were saying, with these potentials for a little bit of a hiccup in the plan, you definitely want to feel ready to extend it if you need to, just because, you know, you don't want to throw off all the work you did for that 30 days because you were in too much of a rush to start reintroducing. And a lot of people, you know, I mean, it might be that they miss the foods. It might be that, like, I mean, certain foods like dairy or rice or something like that might be foods that really wouldn't necessarily bother the person. And I know Chris says he has patients that didn't really start healing until they added something like fermented dairy. So, I think for the majority of people out there, extending the reset a little longer is not going to like derail their progress necessarily.
But, exactly. And I think you just have to be ready, like you said, to, you know, be willing to extend it. And I think a lot of people, they're thinking, oh, 30 days, I just need to get to 30 days. And if you know, any little hiccup comes along, they're really not willing to extend it. And that's where the problem comes in.
Right. And I feel like calling it a 30-day reset sometimes, you know, gives people an end point that they are fixated on. And for most people doing it, you can start reintroducing on that 30 days. But just because it's called a 30-day reset doesn't mean 30 days is the exact amount of time it needs to take, and then you'll be done. So
exactly.
I think your recommendations were really good. And I think the taking a probiotic is definitely a really smart move for people when they're on antibiotics, just because it can really help prevent those negative side effects that can sometimes come from even a short course. So
exactly. And you know, one of the things that I sometimes recommend to someone who's on an antibiotic too is prebiotics. But in this case, I'd actually say to stay away from those for now, just because we know that a lot of people are sensitive to FODMAP foods, and prebiotics are FODMAPs. So generally, I would say if you know you're trying to minimize all variables that are going into your diet, that adding a prebiotic is probably not the best move to do. So probiotics are pretty, you know, they usually don't cause any negative effects for people. You know, very, very few people are sensitive to probiotics. So I would say that's your safest bet to not only try to prevent that bowel movement change that can sometimes happen, but also to just minimize any variables going in so you know exactly what's going on.
Cool. Well, I think that was really good advice, and hopefully this person feels better soon and, you know, is able to recover fully from that course of antibiotics. So, of course, we always think people should, you know, try to not take antibiotics, but a lot of times you really do just need to take them. And, you know, this is a case where I'm sure this person feels so much better after taking the antibiotics to get rid of that infection. So as much as we like to say minimize your antibiotic use, there's a lot of times that you'll need to take them to, you know, deal with a more serious issue. And
right. You just want to be smart about your antibiotic use. The problem with antibiotics now is just that they're so overly prescribed, and that's the bigger issue. So as long as you're smart and, you know, really talk to your doctor about whether it's necessary for you to take them, then I think that's the best thing you can do.
Yeah, and then also following your recommendations for what you should do while taking the antibiotics.
Exactly.
So anyway, so that is all we have for this week. We hope you're enjoying the question and answer sessions, and remember to submit your question in the Q&A section of the forum. It's a special section that's just for Personal Paleo Launchpad members. So Kelsey and I have been pulling our questions from the general forum just because we haven't really been getting too many questions in the special Q&A section. So I just wanted to remind everyone that that part of the forum is only for paid members. So it's your special little section, and we want to make sure you take advantage of it. But anyway, enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll see you around next time.
All right. Take care, Laura.
You too, Kelsey.